Hi, this is Frank Williams, otherwise known as the Reverend Timothy Farthing, Vicar of Warmington-on-Sea during the Second World War. And this is me saying, oh, come on, all ye faithful, have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas and enjoy yourselves.
Think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run.
Yes, hello one and all, and welcome to the Christmas edition of the Dad's Army podcast. This year it's going to be a commentary episode. These commentaries seem to be going down quite well with you, so we've got a couple more coming up over the next couple of months. This time round it's going to be turkey dinner, and that's primarily because it's the most Christmassy of Dad's Army episodes, if you like, despite it not even being set at Christmas. There are other episodes of Dad's Army that are officially designated Christmas specials. However, they've got nothing to do with Christmas whatsoever. So turkey dinner tends to get played on television these days at Christmas. In fact, this year it's on BBC Two at 8 o'clock in the evening. So if you'd like to watch the episode without the commentary, then feel free just to switch on your television on Christmas Day. Just before we get going, I'd like to say thank you to Trevor Cass, who has made a donation in order to keep the podcast running. Thank you very much indeed, Trevor. Your donation, as all donations, are very, very much appreciated. In a moment, we'll go for a break, and when we come back, you'll hear a countdown, which will be a basic 3-2-1 play countdown. And on the word play, press play on your DVD recorder, or press play on your computer, however it is that you're choosing to watch this episode, and then you'll be watching the episode more or less in line with me when I recorded the commentary. All that's left for me to say is have a wonderful Christmas and a very relaxing new year, and we'll be back towards the end of January.
Three, two, one, play.
Hello there, and welcome to podcast number 42. This is officially our Christmas special podcast. And as such, I am joined by Oliver once again. Hello, Oliver.
Hello, James.
Hello, and we are discussing turkey dinner. Well, we're not discussing, this is a commentary episode. We're going to be talking about turkey dinner as we see it happening. Little bit of housekeeping to start with. I have a cold, so I'd like your collective sympathy, please. So what it means is that you're probably going to hear coughs and splutters all the way through this podcast, because as usual the commentaries are unedited completely.
And probably by the next episode you'll hear me coughing and spluttering, because I will of course hit.
Well, I sincerely hope not. but we shall see. Anyway, podcast number 42, I think that's quite a milestone. I think we're going to have to try and get some Douglas Adams references in this time
yes.
round. but turkey dinner, then, this is the seventh series episode. I think this is the sixth episode of the seventh series. And although it's not strictly a Christmas special, it's almost it's almost certain to be shown at Christmas or near Christmas each year.
With the old turkey, absolutely. It's a very nice episode, this, and it has, to me, some good layers of comedy. You know, these nice little sequences, particularly the end, but we'll talk about that when we get there. It's a good episode.
No, I agree. This was originally transmitted on the 23rd of December, 1974, so this was clearly intended to be kind of, you know, festive special.
Yeah.
But it's strange, isn't it? Because there isn't actually any episode within Dad's Army, even the actual Christmas specials, that feature Christmas or are particularly festive.
No. Which, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wonder how much, you know, during the Second World War, how much of Christmas what we're accustomed to with trees and decorations of that. I wonder whether during the Second World War, whether they actually went to town or not, that would be interesting to know. If anyone out there does know, please contact James, because we would be interested to hear.
It would be interesting. I can't really imagine what Christmas would be like during wartime. Well, to be honest with you, I can't really imagine what wartime would be like Full stop. And I think that's one of the reasons why I appreciate the more serious moments of Dad's Army, because it does give you a kind of understanding of how serious things can be. I mean, I know it's fundamentally a comedy, but there are some scenes that are very serious when you realise how difficult things were.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think we've talked about this episode at all so far. Well, we've just talked about Christmas in general.
I quite liked Arnold's reaction. It was, I'm sorry, sir. And it was almost like, ooh, you know, you were a bit out of order. I think it's the one time I think Godfrey almost, because he's always standing up to Captain Mannering, but I think even Godfrey thought that Mannering was a little out of order there. And his delivery was very good on that line.
Ah, right. Which part was that? Because I was talking about something
it
else.
It was, I think Mannering was about to tell a joke. And Godfrey was smiling before it started. Wipe that smile off your face, Godfrey, you know.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. Sorry, I remember this. Now, Mannering does this a couple of times where he decides to tell a joke. And I think they both go down incredibly badly. There's this one. And the thing is, I actually think they're quite funny, these jokes. There's another one as well whereby he talks about an Australian being asked, have you come here to die?
Oh, yeah.
And he said, no, I've come here yesterday.
Is that when they got the bomb on their lap in the bank and the bomb's dropped down?
You're
and
right.
He
something
decides
nasty
to
in the
vault.
You're quite right. But it's quite interesting, really, how they decide to use that little... I think device is the wrong word, but you know what I mean. Mannering decides to tell a joke. It's slightly different...
Yeah,
to what you would expect normally.
And great that Wilson gets the best laugh, you know. It's just wonderful, wonderful.
He always does, though, doesn't he?
Yeah,
Wilson. He's it's funny because I think Wilson's line is less funny than Mannering's joke.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit unfunny. We can talk a little bit about that gent now. We've just seen Taflin Thomas.
Taflin Thomas.
Yes,
I like Taflin Thomas and. He was, his nickname, from what I've heard, because he was in Doctor Who a couple of times, was Taff the Teeth, as dubbed, I believe, by Nicholas Courtney. But around this time, I think in between doing his first episode in Dad's Army, and before he did this series as a regular, he did three episodes of Doctor Who called The Green Death, where he played Dave. a Welsh character. He always played Welsh characters in both of his Doctor Who's. That was opposite John Pertwee, and he was also in John Pertwee's very first story, Spearhead from Space, where he played a Welsh hospital porter called Mullins, who sells the story. There's something a bit weird going on here, isn't there? I really like his character. I think it's a shame. I mean, I understand, obviously, with the tragic passing of James Beck, that there was a gap. But what do you think about the rumours that John Laurie was saying this Welsh guy is getting more gags than me? I mean,
that particular rumour, or it's not really a rumour, it's a story, really. And it's a story that Jimmy Perry tells quite a bit. And he told it a couple of years ago, actually, at the Dad's Army Appreciation Society members' meal. And I don't know whether it was true. If it was true, then I assume it's John Laurie trying to get a dry joke across. Yeah. And to be honest with you, what actor, particularly someone like John Laurie, who wasn't a main star in Dad's Army, is going to have that much influence in order to say, get rid of someone?
Yeah.
And he did. I don't really believe it's true. I do think that Cheeseman gets a bad press.
Yes.
And I think you touched on it a second ago, and that people are unable to consider his character anything but a direct replacement for James Beck.
Yes.
And I think that is incredibly unfair on Thomas, because anyone who came in to fill a position or to replace someone was always going to be on a loser.
Yes.
And the thing is, the writers never intended him,
I don't think,
to replace him. He's such a different character to Walker.
Yeah.
And I've always liked him. I have a feeling that you and I might be the only Dad's Army fans who actually like the character of Cheeseman.
Well, I mean, we are assuming that they wrote him out. I mean, Taflin Thomas is a very popular actor, and after doing this season of Dad's Army, he went on to become a regular in the Terry Nation drama Survivors.
Oh, right.
He was a very, very
popular actor. He worked enormously right up until his death in 82. He did a Heidi High, playing a character called Gareth Davies. You know, I mean, he really was the epitome of a Welsh character actor, yeah. You know. Really lovely, lovely performer.
Don't know. I really don't know why then. I mean, I've also heard and read stories about him not being particularly popular amongst the regular cast.
Right.
And again, I don't know how true that is.
No.
It certainly doesn't come across
no.
in his performance or the way that he interacts with the other characters. And I think, I mean, we're watching Turkey Dinner at the moment and he doesn't feature in this scene very much at all. But I think when you do see him, he integrates just as well as any other.
I think the problem is, probably the mistake was that rather than have him feature outside of Platoon, like the Vicar and the Verger, and actually just have him as the photographer,
yeah.
because they lost that essence of... I mean, in his first story, and he's photographing Captain Mainwaring and, you know, fighting the American captain in the pub. You know, in that episode, the device was well used, that the photographer would follow them about.
Mm.
But they lost that. I guess they thought, well, there's only so much you can do. But I like his banter between Mainwaring, you know.
No, I think you're right. I think the device you mentioned there, I mean, his first episode was Man of Action.
Yeah.
But within Man of Action and My British Buddy, he has the same role. He's just covering things. He's just trying to get photographs. But now, as you said, we're being asked to accept him as a member of the platoon in the same
yeah.
way we automatically accept the others, and I think that's probably difficult.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. This particular scene that we're seeing here, this is a rather lengthy studio scene.
Yeah.
And they talk about... they talk about events that we never actually see. They talk about basically them going on a pub crawl.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, but if there's one unscreened episode of Dad's Army I would like to have seen, would have been the platoon going on a pub crawl.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, which is the episode? I'm so bad with the titles of the episode, but when we're all playing darts.
Absent Friends.
Absent Friends, yes. And Mannering's coming in and he's trying to get them... I mean, that's a great episode. That's a really, really good... And whenever I think of this scene, I picture them in that pub and think, oh, I wonder what other pub... I mean, presumably that was a different pub to the one that was in My British Buddy.
It's certainly a different set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there was
same
also...
barman, was it? Or that Ooh. Chap was in quite a few, wasn't he?
You're asking me that now.
Larry Martin.
Ah, Larry Martin, who went on to play Walker in a radio show occasionally.
Yeah, I think I'm right in thinking he was a barman.
I should be able to find out, but I have in front of me a reference book, which was given to me at the recent Vicar and Chips evening
yes.
by Paul from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, so I really have no excuse not to know these questions now. Right, Absent Friends, here we are, Vern Morgan.
Oh, Vern
Landlord.
Morgan, but you're right. Vern
that
Morgan.
That rings a bell, does it?
Yeah, it does ring a bell. I think he did more than one.
Okay. Well, what's the episode where you have Mannering and Wilson in a pub at the beginning with Captain Square with a watch in his mouth and he's watching his drink?
Oh, well, that's when they do the test, isn't it?
And don't forget the diver, isn't it?
Don't forget the diver.
Right, so there's a barman in that one. Is that the same one? Do you know, I think we're going to be... we're going to have to try and be a little bit more disciplined about actually talking about the episode we're watching. But
well,
having
this,
said that, I'm not too bothered.
This chap here, I looked him up, this farmhand, and he's played by an actor called Dave Butler.
Mm.
And I looked up Dave Butler because I thought he was rather funny. And the only other credit I can find for him was a 1970s slasher movie called House of Whipcord.
Ah,
where he played it's an undisclosed character. It just says Dave Butler in the credits, which was the same year as Turkey Dinner. But I mean, can you imagine? Like, if you're going to be an actor and you appear in something like Dad's Army, and according to the internet, never really worked again. I mean, how on earth does that happen?
It is strange, because by this point, Dad's Army was attracting... I think this episode attracted 15 million viewers, something like that.
Wow.
I know by today's standards, that's astronomical, but
yes.
this was in the days where there was only, what, three channels? I would imagine.
Well, yeah.
I guess all before Channel 4 and Channel 5. So you would have thought that exposure at prime time, this was shown, as I said, at Christmas time, more or less, at 8 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
This chap should have...
should have rocketed, and he's very, very funny.
No, I think he plays his role very well here.
We're assuming by modern, IMDb and all the other movie websites, you know, we take these as gospel nowadays, but they have errors, and there couldn't be... I mean, he could have done Z-Cars or Softly Softly, and he could have done lots of shows like that, which probably aren't as well catalogued.
It's possible, as they certainly. Could be. Yeah, but no, I know nothing about the actual actor himself. I mean, he gets a couple of very good lines, and
yeah.
I think it's actually comparable to a couple of modern-day comedies now, whereby you bring in relative unknowns and you give them really funny lines.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that particularly with a couple of American comedies, through Friends, for instance. You get the occasional... Sometimes they really are just token characters. They might not even have a name, but they may, you know, one of the girls may have a new boyfriend who comes in and happens to be incredibly funny.
Yes.
And then you never see him
ever again.
And I think this is very, very similar.
Do you think this is a mistake? When this turkey dies behind Arthur, do you think that was... Because, we can't allow one to go missing. And then you get this amazing shot where he crawls behind him. And I wonder whether that was on purpose or whether it was an accident. I just think that was a lovely shot. You couldn't have wished for it better.
Well, you say, or it's a maxim, isn't it, that you don't work with animals or children.
Yeah.
And because you simply can't direct them. And no. Who knows, maybe someone did.
I mean, David Croft had this amazing ability, but he uses animals rather well, like whether it's sheep or the cows, I believe, giving a reaction shot in one. I think there's a dog that does... They do the head turns, you know, while the animals are sort of watching. Yeah, yeah. And so David obviously had a bit of an affinity with animals. This is a nice sequence, I think.
It is. This is the only location piece, I think, within the entire episode. And it was done on a... Well, it was done on a real farm. It was North Berrington Turkey Farm, which in... according to my reference book here, it says it's Caston Hall in Norfolk. So I wonder whether or not it's you can go and visit that still.
Well, who knows? Maybe Dave Butler worked on that farm. Maybe they thought, what a wonderful piece of casting. Let's use the man himself. Or maybe he said, look, I'll let you use my farm if I can be in it. You never know. And maybe Dave managed to blag a role in House of Whipcord and then went back to his turkey farm. Who knows?
Well, who knows indeed. But,
Dave, if you're listening to the podcast, we'd love to hear from you.
Please get in touch with us, absolutely. You remember last time we got together, Oliver, to do a commentary, which for the listener was probably some time ago now, but we talked about the absence of Arnold Ridley on location.
Yes.
Well, I found out a little bit more about that after our recording, and Arnold Ridley wasn't on any location shoots during Series 9 at all.
Right.
So it wasn't unique to that particular episode. The reason why I raise it at this point is because clearly we've just seen him chasing turkeys.
Yes, which would
have been 3 years prior before to the number...
I see. Yeah, all right. Well, that's very interesting to hear because... Well, I guess, bless him, he would have been getting on by that time. I mean, it's now a problem with Last of a Summer Wine. Peter Salas and Frank Thornton aren't allowed to film on location.
Oh, is that true? Really?
Because of insurance. They can't afford the insurance to have them on location. So now they're all in studio shots, which is such a shame when so much of Last of a Summer Wine... is these wonderful country shots, and now they're not allowed.
Well, the only part of that programme that I really enjoy... Well, actually, I'll tell a lie, there's two parts of that programme I really enjoy. I love the music.
The music.
I really love the music, and I love the scenery during the opening credits.
Yes.
But the minute they start speaking, I'm sorry, it's a turn off for me.
Frank would love to be in Last of a Summer Wine.
Really?
He'd absolutely love to do a Last of a Summer Wine.
I think he'd fit in perfectly.
His friend, Josephine Chewson, who was very big in keeping up appearances. Speak of devil, there's Frank. Looking roguishly handsome.
This is interesting, actually, because, I mean, I don't know how many there are, but you never know, someone might count these up now that I've said it. But you think of how many committee scenes there are throughout the entire run of Dad's Army. And Madarin chairs every single one, practically.
Yes.
And can you think of a particular committee scene where Frank is present
and he's cheerful. That vicar has got a problem,
yeah,
I'll tell you.
He really doesn't enjoy it. For a head of a community, he's really not in the mood, is he, to be fair?
I always wondered this, and do you know, I should have asked him, and I interviewed him perhaps a couple of weeks ago now, why was the vicar so grumpy? I mean, what were his issues?
Yeah, I mean, he really isn't his first episode, he's sort of blissfully ignorant of the fact that they're stealing his gas.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. Although he does say on Battle of the Giants, this is all really rather exciting. I think he likes to be out in the action, but when it comes to being the vicar in the church hall, he finds rather boring.
Yeah, there's something fundamentally disturbing about having a miserable vicar within a church, and yet the minute you take him into the middle of a field with a whole load of feathers, he gets excited and happy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very old character when you think about it, really, isn't it?
He has a lot of layers. I mean, they all do, really. I think they're all very, very good characters and well fleshed out, but I think there's a lot more. I mean, I think Jonathan Ross commented it on when he interviewed Frank last year. He said, well, you know, there was more to the vicar than met the eye, wasn't there? You know, there wasn't something quite right, you know.
Yes.
I think there's a spin-off sitcom waiting to be born with Frank and Reverend Timothy Farthing.
The Secret Life of the Vicar.
Yeah.
You know, would have been quite interesting, certainly. I do have to admit, I find these kind of scenes that we're watching here quite comforting.
Yes.
In the same way that I enjoy the opening scenes in, you know, which the parades, which can sometimes last up until, you know, 6 or 7 minutes into the episode.
Yeah.
And I really kind of enjoy it. And for me, when I think about Dad's Army, I mean, this is the kind of picture that I have.
Yes.
I've either got the parades in my mind, or I've got them all sitting around in a committee talking about something that, you know, about organising an event or something that they make such a hash of.
Yes.
You know, they still manage to make the event work, but the planning is a farce.
Yeah.
It's a farce.
Do you have a favourite Dad's Army moment?
Oh, blimey, what a question. Probably not. It's weird, isn't it? Because if I think about another series like Only Fools and Horses, I can give you the trigger for, you know, where he leaves the bar open. And I could say, yes, I think that makes me laugh absolutely every single time. Is there one actually within Dad's Army? I'll think about that and I'll come back to you before we finish recording.
I think my all-time favourite scene is in The Honourable Man. But you'll have to look out for that at a future podcast, I think.
Well, it might be a prior one, depending on when I publish it. Because one of the wonderful things about podcasts is that you don't need to record in order.
No, that's true, yeah.
But at the time of recording, we have yet to record our commentary on that, but you may have already heard it, listener. You never know. Oh. So another interesting part about this particular scene is that you've got a number of the female actresses.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I don't know whether anyone knows it. Olive Mercer there, playing Mrs. Yeatman. I think I'm right, towards the end, she's sort of wearing an eye patch. Is that correct?
She does wear an eye patch in one particular episode, but I couldn't tell you which one it was.
No.
But I know it's got absolutely no plot implication at all.
Obviously, something in real life.
Yeah.
Pamela there looking absolutely radiant.
I've never met Pamela when she hasn't looked radiant, to be honest.
No.
Even to this day.
Oh, I like this perfect. when Jonesy kicks off and he goes back to his seat. This is very funny. All right, sir. Yeah, I know. All right.
This
and he kicks off again.
This is the element that I don't like about Jones.
Really?
Yeah, because he's basically a child there.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, even Pamela Condell is patting him on the shoulder.
Yeah,
what do you do, replicate a child?
Yeah.
Calm down, man.
Yeah,
you know?
I know what you mean. I mean, the character of Jones, I know he's one of your pet hates. And
hates is too strong a word.
Yeah. There are moments when, he's a little bit too predictable. I like that, though, when he goes, because it's the whole scenario. I think sometimes the problem with it is, you can be a kid and it's predictable. But there, you've got your superior officer saying, come back to your chair. And he's like, all right, sir. Yeah, I know. And then he goes back for some more. And I enjoy that.
Yeah. I'm not so keen, as I said, on most Jane's moments. I think I've just thought of my favourite Dad's Army moment.
Yeah?
Yeah. In Getting the Bird, there's a scene between Wilson and his daughter at the end.
Oh.
But that's not the scene I'm thinking
of. It's with John Laurie.
Absolutely.
Brilliant scene.
Just afterwards.
Fantastic.
And I think that gets me every time, and I can watch that again and again. And if you watch it in isolation, you're not watching a comedy.
No, that's a,
you're watching
it's
a drama.
Beautiful moment. It's a that's a very, very good scene.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, that's why I wanted to take a bit of time to think about that.
That just there, Telfer and Thomas was talking about his wife's gravy. Mm. Is she the only other wife, other than Captain Mannering's wife, whom we never see?
Goodness me, I think is she the only other wife within the platoon?
Well, that's a very good... Yeah,
I think she is. Because Walker had a string of girlfriends.
Yeah.
Jones... No, well, Mrs. Fox in the very last episode.
Yeah.
Although there is always hints of Jones, isn't there? There's stories about him and Mrs. Prosser.
Mrs. Prosser, yeah. Dear me.
Godfrey's never married.
No.
We know that he fell in love from the dialogue in All Is Safely Gathered In.
Mm. Fraser wouldn't send... Please send £10.
Yes. So long as the woman he's interested in, or any woman, has got big, strong thighs and he doesn't mind.
Yeah.
No, I think it is. I think Mrs. Cheeseman is the only person referred to directly.
See. You see, they missed... Mrs. Cheeseman could have been a fantastic character, but we just never met her.
Well...
Not yet, anyway. You never know. It's never too late.
This must have been a particularly difficult scene to film, I think.
Yeah.
Not so much the scene that we're actually watching now, but... Well, possibly, but in the other room where you've got an absolute... Well,
you've got at least 30 extras in there, haven't you?
And they're all pensioners.
Yeah.
And there's food.
Yeah.
And you don't know whether it's props, but...
And the visual gags in it... I mean, I was talking earlier about this episode having layers. I mean, the previous scene in the church hall... Is it a church hall where they meet? Yeah. And they're all sat around dinner.
Yeah.
And what's funny about that scene is that I thought that scene was a very simple scene because they're talking about essentially a menu and every gag is related to roast dinner. Oh. I mean, what a simple idea to literally lay out the gags like a menu, like you were eating the meal and on each part of a meal, you get a different gag and a different character chips in for each bit. What a simple idea, yet when you think about it, you know, brilliant, you know.
That's superb. I'd never considered that before, but I think sometimes that's the genius of the writing of Dad's Army.
Yeah, totally.
Is that it's so good you don't notice how good it is.
Well, like you said, it's comfortable.
Yeah.
And to me, this is the best part of the episode. I think this is all fantastic with Mannering. I mean, he looks great.
Why is he wearing a white bow tie?
Ooh, well...
Because it does look much more like a waiter with a white bow tie.
Yeah,
than it does with a black.
Yeah, I know what you mean, actually.
I'd never asked that question ever before, but...
Maybe it was a fashion of a tie, you know, but I assume it was all very, very well researched.
Oh, there's also one other thing I wanted to point out on this scene. There's a nameplate on the door of Mannering's office.
Oh, yes.
You don't see that in others.
No. And they make a big... Well, like for Harold Bennett's great gag at the beginning. About being, you know, short, fat font to represent the man inside. But, yeah, you're quite right, we never see
it
again.
You never see it again. You never see it again. It's it looks like it was written purely for that for this episode, so... I can see you smiling now. It's just because you've got Lavender and Arthur Lowe together doing their slapstick comedy. And we've talked about this before, I know. But I think it's the indignation that Arthur Lowe is able to demonstrate.
Oh.
You know, and the thing is, you know, if you want to... If you want to keep everything running smoothly, you keep away from Pike when there's hazards around. I mean, you can imagine, you know, the 1990s, the noughties... risk assessment for this particular event would be, it would just have one risk, which would be Pike,
yeah.
Possibly Jones as well. And someone's going to get covered in food, aren't they? Let's face it.
I think it's a credit to Ian Lavender in that when he was in Yes Minister, he did two episodes of Yes Minister, not long after Dad's Army. He, Dr. He was a doctor in it, and he had all these wonderful ideas about town planning.
How's that?
He was the clever one. Hmm. And every, you know, Paul Eddington is desperate to hear all of his ideas. Like, what a wonderful transition to Pike. You know, I mean, what a great actor. And this is just brilliant how they've done this. And it looks like it was all shot in one take. You know, just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, your point you make about Ian there. Because he was kind of, and do you know, even now, is still lumbered a little with the image of Stupid Boy. The minute yes. you say, and Frank mentioned this at the event that he hosted recently, the minute you mention something like Ian Lavender doing the Times crossword, people start smiling because the idea of the Stupid Boy,
yeah, absolutely,
completing the Times crossword is so odd, it's funny.
Yeah.
And that must have blighted Lavender's career ever since, pretty much.
Well, you know, he did a Keeping Up Appearances directed by Harold Snowd as, I believe, a burglar alarm guy, and he comes around, he's like a salesman, and he honestly plays it like Pike. Really? I mean, Snowd must have said, I want you to play this like Pike, because he opens it, he's like, bucket! And it is so Pike, but it's Pike 20 years later.
Yeah.
So he obviously was stuck for a time. Mm-hmm. But now, he's got an amazing career. I've been very lucky to have met Ian, and a very, very nice man. And he's got an amazing career. He's had a renowned. But also, he appears to have, at this stage in his career, sort of embraced Dad's Army a bit more. Mm. I don't know.
I think the attitude that he demonstrates when he talks about Dad's Army has changed massively, and I think that's over the last couple of years. And I don't know why. I mean, he's almost become a little bit of a mouthpiece for Dad's Army.
Yeah, yeah.
Because whenever there is an event, like the 40th anniversary event at the Imperial War Museum, it was Lavender who was quoted.
Yes.
And on relatively innocuous remarks about contemporary television.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I was there because he gave us that quote for the podcast as well.
Yeah.
And so I recorded it and I didn't think anything of it because I realised it was completely in context. You read The Sun the next day.
Huge spread.
And all
of
a sudden, it was as if Ian Lavender used the event as a kind of vehicle to make a particular point about today's television. And he got a lot of criticism for that, which is completely disproportionate.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're quite right. He's an incredibly diverse actor. And I think it's a little bit unfair in a way, and he's a victim of his own success, because he's played Pike so effectively that he's got lumbered with that image forever, almost. And I wonder how he really feels about it.
Well, hopefully, let's try and get him on a podcast in the near future.
You never know. He has been on the podcast before. But anyway, the credits have rolled, and we've reached the end of our time on Turkey Dinner. I do hope, listener, that you didn't mind us diverging? This is the brandy talking. tangentising. Is that a word?
It is now.
Yeah, there you go. moving off the point so much. But thank you for bearing with us. Thank you, Oliver, for joining me once again for another podcast. I think it would only be appropriate at this time of year to say, have a wonderful Christmas.
Have a fantastic Christmas, everyone, and really do. Watch Dad's Army. It is being repeated over Christmas. I assume it'll be The Love of Three Oranges, but it's in the schedule. Dad's Army will be back.
Okay.
So enjoy.
We'll be back with you in the new year at some point. Bye for now.
All the best. Bye-bye.